Disc 5.
He went on, came out at the other end of the mews, turned right and right again, and came out in Pond Street once more, 50 yards from the entrance of Bertram's hotel. Once again he paused, admiring the handsome lines of yet another racing car. "You're a beauty, too," said Chief Inspector Davy. "Your number's the same as the last time I saw you. I rather fancy your number plate always is the same, and that should mean," he broke off. "Or should it?" he muttered. He looked up towards what could have been the sky. "Fog's getting thicker," he said to himself. Outside the door to Bertram's, the Irish commissionaire was standing swinging his arms backwards and forwards with some violence to keep himself warm. Chief Inspector Davy said good evening to him. "Good evening, sir. Nasty night." "Yes. I shouldn't think anyone would want to go out tonight who hadn't got to." The swing doors were pushed open, and a middle-aged lady came out and paused uncertainly on the step. "Want a taxi, ma'am?" "Oh, dear. I meant to walk." "I wouldn't if I were you, mum. It's very nasty, this fog. Even in a taxi it won't be too easy." "Do you think you could find me a taxi?" said the lady doubtfully. "I'll do my best. You go inside now and keep warm, and I'll come in and tell you if I've got one." His voice changed, modulated to a persuasive tone. "Unless you have to, mum, I wouldn't go out tonight at all." "Oh, dear. Perhaps you're right. But I'm expected at some friends in Chelsea. I don't know. It might be very difficult getting back here. What do you think?" Michael Gorman took charge. "If I were you, mum," he said firmly, "I'd go in and telephone to your friends. It's not nice for a lady like you to be out on a foggy night like this." "Well, really, yes, well, perhaps you're right." She went back in again. "I have to look after them," said Mickey Gorman, turning in an explanatory manner to Father. "That kind would get her bag snatched, she would. Going out this time of night in a fog and wandering about Chelsea or West Kensington or wherever she's trying to go. I suppose you've had a good deal of experience of dealing with elderly ladies," said Davy. "Ah, yes, indeed. This place is a home from home to them, bless their aging hearts. How about you, sir? Were you wanting a taxi?" "Don't suppose you could get me one if I did," said Father. "There don't seem to be many about in this, and I don't blame them." "Ah, now, I might lay my hand on one for you. There's a place round the corner where there's usually a taxi driver got his cab parked, having a warm-up and a drop of something to keep the cold out." Taxi's no good to me," said Father with a sigh. He jerked his thumb towards Bertram's hotel. "I've got to go inside. I've got a job to do." "Indeed, now? Would it still be the missing canon?"
"Not exactly. He's been found."
"Found?" The man stared at him. "Found where?"
"Wandering about with concussion after an accident."
"Ah, that's just what one might expect of him. Crossed the road without looking, I expect."
"That seems to be the idea," said Father.
He nodded and pushed through the doors into the hotel. There were not very many people in the lounge this evening. He saw Miss Marple sitting in a chair near the fire, and Miss Marple saw him. She made, however, no sign of recognition. He went towards the desk. Miss Gorringe, as usual, was behind her books. She was, he thought, faintly discomposed to see him. It was a very slight reaction, but he noted the fact.
"You remember me, Miss Gorringe," he said. "I came here the other day." "Yes, of course I remember you, Chief Inspector. Is there anything more you want to know? Do you want to see Mr. Humphreys?" "No, thank you. I don't think that'll be necessary. I'd just like one more look at your register, if I may."
"Of course." She pushed it along to him. He opened it and looked slowly down the pages. To Miss Gorringe he gave the appearance of a man looking for one particular entry. In actuality, this was not the case. Father had an accomplishment which he had learnt early in life and had developed into a highly skilled art. He could remember names and addresses with a perfect and photographic memory. That memory would remain with him for 24 or even 48 hours. He shook his head as he shut the book and returned it to her. "Canon Pennefather hasn't been in, I suppose," he said in a light voice. "Canon Pennefather? You know he's turned up again." "No, indeed, nobody has told me." "Where?" "Some place in the country. Car accident, it seems. Wasn't reported to us. Some good Samaritan just picked him up and looked after him." "Oh, I am pleased. Yes, I really am very pleased. I was worried about him." "So were his friends," said Father. "Actually, I was looking to see if one of them might be staying here now. I can't remember his name now, but I'd know it if I saw it."
"Tomlinson?" said Miss Gorringe helpfully.
"He is due next week, from Salisbury." "No, not Tomlinson. Well, it doesn't matter." He turned away. It was quiet in the lounge tonight. An ascetic-looking middle-aged man was reading through a badly typed thesis, occasionally writing a comment in the margin in such small, crabbed handwriting as to be almost illegible. Every time he did this, he smiled in vinegary satisfaction. There were one or two married couples of long standing who had little need to talk to each other. Occasionally, two or three people were gathered together in the name of the weather conditions, discussing anxiously how they or their families were going to get where they wanted to be. "I rang up and begged Susan not to come by car. It means the M1 and always so dangerous in fog. They say it's clearer in the Midlands." Chief Inspector Davy noted them as he passed. Without haste, and with no seeming purpose, he arrived at his objective. Miss Marple was sitting near the fire and observing his approach.
"So, you're still here, Miss Marple? I'm glad."
"I go tomorrow," said Miss Marple. That fact had somehow been implicit in her attitude. She had sat not relaxed, but upright, as one sits in an airport lounge or a railway waiting room. Her luggage, he was sure, would be packed, only toilet things and nightwear to be added. "It is the end of my fortnight's holiday," she explained.
"You've enjoyed it, I hope."
Miss Marple did not answer at once. "In a way, yes," she stopped.
"And in another way, no?"
"It's difficult to explain what I mean."
"Aren't you, perhaps, a little too near the fire? Rather hot here. Wouldn't you like to move into that corner, perhaps?"
Miss Marple looked at the corner indicated, then she looked at Chief Inspector Davy. "I think you are quite right," she said. He gave her a hand up, carried her handbag and her book for her, and established her in the quiet corner he had indicated.
"All right?"
"Quite all right."
"You know why I suggested it?"
"You thought, very kindly, that it was too hot for me by the fire. Besides," she added, "our conversation cannot be overheard here."
"Have you got something you want to tell me, Miss Marple?"
"Now why should you think that?"
"You looked as though you had," said Davy.
"I'm sorry I showed it so plainly," said Miss Marple. "I didn't mean to."
"Well, what about it?"
"I don't know if I ought to do so. I would like you to believe, Inspector, that I am not really fond of interfering. I am against interference. Though often well meant, it can cause a great deal of harm."
"It's like that, is it? I see. Yes, it's quite a problem for you."
"Sometimes one sees people doing things that seem to one unwise, even dangerous. But has one any right to interfere?" "Usually not, I think."
"Is this Canon Pennefather you're talking about?"
"Canon Pennefather?" Miss Marple sounded very surprised. Oh, no. Oh, dear me, no. Nothing whatever to do with him. It concerns a girl.
A girl, indeed. And you thought I could help?
I don't know, said Miss Marple. I simply don't know. But I'm worried, very worried.
Father did not press her. He sat there looking large and comfortable and rather stupid. He let her take her time. She had been willing to do her best to help him, and he was quite prepared to do anything he could to help her. He was not, perhaps, particularly interested. On the other hand, one never knew.
One reads in the papers, said Miss Marple in a low, clear voice, accounts of proceedings in court, of young people, children or girls in need of care and protection. It's just a sort of legal phrase, I suppose, but it could mean something real.
This girl you mentioned, you feel she is in need of care and protection?
Yes, yes I do.
Alone in the world?
Oh, no, said Miss Marple. Very much not so, if I may put it that way. She is, to all outward appearances, very heavily protected and very well cared for.
Sounds interesting, said Father.
She was staying in this hotel, said Miss Marple, with a Mrs. Carpenter, I think. I looked in the register to see the name. The girl's name is Elvira Blake.
Father looked up with a quick air of interest.
She was a lovely girl, very young, very much, as I say, sheltered and protected. Her guardian was a Colonel Luscombe, a very nice man, quite charming. Elderly, of course, and, I am afraid, terribly innocent.
The guardian or the girl?
I meant the guardian, said Miss Marple. I don't know about the girl, but I do think she is in danger. I came across her quite by chance in Battersea Park. She was sitting at a refreshment place there with a young man.
Oh, that's it, is it? Said Father. Undesirable, I suppose. Beatnik, spiv, thug?
A very handsome man, said Miss Marple. Not so very young. 30-odd. The kind of man that I should say is very attractive to women. But his face is a bad face. Cruel. Hawk-like. Predatory.
He mayn't be as bad as he looks, said Father soothingly.
If anything, he is worse than he looks, said Miss Marple. I am convinced of it. He drives a large racing car.
Father looked up quickly. Racing car?
Yes. Once or twice I've seen it standing near this hotel.
You don't remember the number, do you?
Yes, indeed I do. Fan 2266. I had a cousin who stuttered, Miss Marple explained. That's how I remember it.
Father looked puzzled.
Do you know who he is? Demanded Miss Marple.
As a matter of fact, I do, said Father slowly. Half French, half Polish. Very well-known racing driver. He was world champion 3 years ago. His name is Ladislaus Malinowski. You're quite right in some of your views about him. He has a bad reputation where women are concerned. That is to say, he is not a suitable friend for a young girl. But it's not easy to do anything about that sort of thing. I suppose she is meeting him on the sly, is that it?
Almost certainly, said Miss Marple.
Did you approach her guardian?
I don't know him, said Miss Marple. I've only just been introduced to him once by a mutual friend. I don't like the idea of going to him in a tale-bearing way. I wondered if perhaps in some way you could do something about it.
I can try, said Father. By the way, I thought you might like to know that your friend Canon Pennyfather has turned up all right.
Indeed? Miss Marple looked animated. Where?
A place called Milton St. John.
How very odd. What was he doing there? Did he know?
Apparently,
Chief Inspector Davies stressed the word.
He had had an accident.
What kind of an accident?
Knocked down by a car. Concussed. Or else, of course, he might have been conked on the head.
Oh, I see. Miss Marple considered the point. Doesn't he know himself?
He says, again the chief inspector stressed the word, that he does not know anything.
Very remarkable,
isn't it? The last thing he remembers is driving in a taxi to Kensington Air Station.
Miss Marple shook her head perplexedly. I know it does happen that way in concussion, she murmured. Didn't he say anything useful?
He murmured something about the walls of Jericho.
Joshua, hazarded Miss Marple, or archaeology, excavations? Or I remember long ago a play by Mr. Sutro, I think.
And all this week, north of the Thames, Gaumont Cinemas, The Walls of Jericho, featuring Olga Radbourne and Bart Levin, said Father.
Miss Marple looked at him suspiciously. He could have gone to that film in the Cromwell Road. He could have come out about 11 and come back here, though, if so, someone ought to have seen him.
It would be well before midnight.
Took the wrong bus, Miss Marple suggested, something like that?
Say he got back here after midnight, Father said. He could have walked up to his room without anyone seeing him. But if so, what happened then? And why did he go out again 3 hours later?
Miss Marple groped for a word. The only idea that occurs to me is... Oh! She jumped as a report sounded from the street outside.
The car backfiring, said Father soothingly.
I'm so sorry to be so jumpy. I am nervous tonight. That feeling one has...
That something's going to happen? I don't think you need worry.
I have never liked fog.
I wanted to tell you, said Chief Inspector Davy, that you've given me a lot of help. The things you've noticed here, just little things, they've added up.
So there was something wrong with this place?
There was, and is, everything wrong with it.
Miss Marple sighed. It seemed wonderful at first. Unchanged, you know, like stepping back into the past. To the part of the past that one had loved and enjoyed. She paused. But, of course, it wasn't really like that. I learned, what I suppose I really knew already, that one can never go back. That one should not ever try to go back. That the essence of life is going forward. Life is really a one-way street, isn't it?
Something of the sort, agreed Father.
I remember, said Miss Marple, diverging from her main topic in a characteristic way, I remember being in Paris with my mother and my grandmother, and we went to have tea at the Elysee Hotel. And my grandmother looked round, and she said suddenly, Clara, I do believe I am the only woman here in a bonnet. And she was, too. When she got home, she packed up all her bonnets, and her beaded mantles, too, and sent them off.
To the jumble sale? Inquired Father sympathetically.
Oh, no. Nobody would have wanted them at a jumble sale. She sent them to a theatrical repertory company. They appreciated them very much. But let me see. Miss Marple recovered her direction. Where was I?
Summing up this place.
Yes. It seemed all right, but it wasn't. It was mixed up. Real people and people who weren't real. One couldn't always tell them apart.
What do you mean by not real?
There were retired military men... But there were also what seemed to be military men, but who had never been in the army, and clergymen who weren't clergymen, and admirals and sea captains who've never been in the navy. My friend, Selina Hazy, it amused me at first how she was always so anxious to recognise people she knew, and quite natural, of course, and how often she was mistaken, and they weren't the people she thought they were. But it happened too often. And so I began to wonder. Even Rose, the chambermaid, is so nice, but I began to think that perhaps she wasn't real either.
If it interests you to know, she's an ex-actress. A good one. Gets a better salary here than she ever drew on the stage.
But why?
Mainly as part of the decor. Perhaps there's more than that to it.
I'm glad to be leaving here, said Miss Marple. She gave a little shiver. Before anything happens. Chief Inspector Davy looked at her curiously.
What do you expect to happen? He asked.
Evil of some kind, said Miss Marple.
Evil is rather a big word.
You think it is too melodramatic? But I have some experience. I seem to have been so often in contact with murder.
Murder? Chief Inspector Davis shook his head. I'm not suspecting murder. Just a nice cozy round-up of some remarkably clever criminals.
That's not the same thing. Murder, the wish to do murder, is something quite different. It defies God.
He looked at her and shook his head gently and reassuringly.
There won't be any murders, he said.
A sharp report, louder than the former one, came from outside. It was followed by a scream and another report. Chief Inspector Davy was on his feet, moving with a speed surprising in such a bulky man. In a few seconds, he was through the swing doors and out in the street. The screaming, a woman's, was piercing the mist with a note of terror. Chief Inspector Davy raced down Pond Street in the direction of the screams. He could dimly visualize a woman's figure backed against a railing. In a dozen strides, he had reached her. She wore a long, pale fur coat, and her shining blonde hair hung down each side of her face. He thought for a moment that he knew who she was. Then he realized that this was only a slip of a girl. Sprawled on the pavement at her feet was the body of a man in uniform. Chief Inspector Davy recognized him. It was Michael Gorman. As Davy came up to the girl, she clutched at him, shivering all over, stammering out broken phrases.
Someone tried to kill me. Someone... They shot at me. If it hadn't been for him...
She pointed down at the motionless figure at her feet.
He pushed me back and got in front of me. And then the second shot came, and he fell. He saved my life. I think he's hurt. Badly hurt.
Chief Inspector Davy went down on one knee. His torch came out. The tall Irish commissionaire had fallen like a soldier. The left-hand side of his tunic showed a wet patch that was growing wetter as the blood oozed out into the cloth. Davy rolled up an eyelid, touched a wrist. He rose to his feet again.
"He's at it, all right," he said.
The girl gave a sharp cry.
"Do you mean he's dead? Oh, no, no! He can't be dead."
"Who was it shot at you?"
"I don't know. I'd left my car just round the corner and I was feeling my way along by the railings. I was going to Bertram's hotel, and then suddenly there was a shot, and a bullet went past my cheek, and then he, the porter from Bertram's, came running down the street towards me and shoved me behind him, and then another shot came. I think whoever it was must have been hiding in that area there."
Chief Inspector Davy looked where she pointed. At this end of Bertram's hotel, there was an old-fashioned area below the level of the street, with a gate and some steps down to it. Since it gave only on some storerooms, it was not much used. But a man could have hidden there easily enough.
"You didn't see him?"
"Not properly. He rushed past me like a shadow. It was all thick fog.
Davy nodded.
The girl began to sob hysterically. But who could possibly want to kill me? Why should anyone want to kill me? That's the second time. I don't understand why.
One arm round the girl, Chief Inspector Davy fumbled in his pocket with the other hand. The shrill notes of a police whistle penetrated the mist. In the lounge of Bertram's hotel, Miss Gorringe had looked up sharply from the desk. One or two of the visitors had also looked up. The older and deafer did not look up. Henry, about to lower a glass of brandy to a table, stopped, poised with it still in his hand. Miss Marple sat forward, clutching the arms of her chair. A retired admiral said decisively, "Accident. Cars collided in the fog, I expect." The swing doors from the street were pushed open. Through them came what seemed like an outsized policeman, looking a good deal larger than life. He was supporting a girl in a pale fur coat. She seemed hardly able to walk. The policeman looked round for help with some embarrassment. Miss Gorringe came out from behind the desk, prepared to cope. But at that moment the lift came down. A tall figure emerged, and the girl shook herself free from the policeman's support and ran frantically across the lounge.
"Mother!" she cried. "Oh, Mother! Mother!"
and threw herself sobbing into Bess Sedgwick's arms. Chapter 21 Chief Inspector Davies settled himself back in his chair and looked at the two women sitting opposite him. It was past midnight. Police officials had come and gone. There had been doctors, fingerprint men, an ambulance to remove the body, and now everything had narrowed to this one room, dedicated for the purposes of the law by Bertram's hotel. Chief Inspector Davies sat at one side of the table. Bess Sedgwick and Elvira sat the other side. Against the wall, a policeman sat unobtrusively writing. Detective Sergeant Waddell sat near the door. Father looked thoughtfully at the two women facing him. Mother and daughter. There was, he noted, a strong superficial likeness between them. He could understand how, for one moment in the fog, he had taken Elvira Blake for Bess Sedgwick. But now, looking at them, he was more struck by the points of difference than the points of resemblance. They were not really alike, save in colouring. Yet the impression persisted that here he had a positive and a negative version of the same personality. Everything about Bess Sedgwick was positive. Her vitality, her energy, her magnetic attraction. He admired Lady Sedgwick. He had always admired her. He had admired her courage, and had always been excited over her exploits. Had said, reading his Sunday papers, "She'll never get away with that." And invariably she had got away with it. He had not thought it possible that she would reach Journey's End, and she had reached Journey's End. He admired particularly the indestructible quality of her. She had had one air crash, several car crashes, had been thrown badly twice from her horse, but at the end of it, here she was, vibrant, alive, a personality one could not ignore for a moment. He took off his hat to her mentally. Some day, of course, she would come a cropper. You could only bear a charmed life for so long. His eyes went from mother to daughter. He wondered. He wondered very much. In Elvira Blake, he thought, everything had been driven inward. Bess Sedgwick had got through life by imposing her will on it. Elvira, he guessed, had a different way of getting through life. She submitted, he thought. She obeyed. She smiled in compliance, and behind that, he thought, she slipped away through your fingers. Sly, he said to himself, appraising that fact. That's the only way she can manage, I expect. She can never brazen things out or impose herself. That's why I expect the people who've looked after her have never had the least idea of what she might be up to. He wondered what she had been doing, slipping along the street to Bertram's hotel on a late foggy evening. He was going to ask her presently. He thought it highly probable that the answer he would get would not be the true one. That's the way, he thought, that the poor child defends herself. Had she come here to meet her mother, or to find her mother? It was perfectly possible, but he didn't think so, not for a moment. Instead, he thought of the big sports car tucked away round the corner, the car with the number plate FAN2266. Ladislaus Malinowski must be somewhere in the neighbourhood since his car was there. "Well," said Father, addressing Elvira in his most kindly and fatherlike manner, "well, and how are you feeling now?"
"I'm quite all right," said Elvira.
"Good. I'd like you to answer a few questions, if you feel up to it, because, you see, time is usually the essence of these things. You were shot at twice, and a man was killed. We want as many clues as we can get to the person who killed him."
"I'll tell you everything I can, but it all came so suddenly, and you can't see anything in a fog. I've no idea myself who it could have been, or even what he looked like. That's what was so frightening."
"You said this was the second time somebody had tried to kill you. Does that mean there was an attempt on your life before?"
"Did I say that? I can't remember." Her eyes moved uneasily. "I don't think I said that."
"Oh, but you did, you know," said Father.
"I expect I was just being hysterical."
"No," said Father, "I don't think you were. I think you meant just what you said."
"I might have been imagining things," said Elvira. Her eyes shifted again. Bess Sedgwick moved. She said quietly,
"You'd better tell him, Elvira."
Elvira shot a quick, uneasy look at her mother.
"You needn't worry," said Father reassuringly. "We know quite well in the police force that girls don't tell their mothers or their guardians everything. We don't take those things too seriously, but we've got to know about them. Because, you see, it all helps."
Bess Sedgwick said, "Was it in Italy?"
"Yes," said Elvira.
Father said,
"That's where you've been at school, isn't it? Or to a finishing place, or whatever they call it nowadays."
"Yes. I was at Contessa Martinelli's. There were about 18 or 20 of us."
"And you thought that somebody tried to kill you. How was that?"
"Well, a big box of chocolates and sweets and things came for me. There was a card with it, written in Italian, in a flowery hand. The sort of thing they say, you know, to the bellissima signorina, something like that. And my friends and I, well, we laughed about it a bit, and wondered who'd sent it."
"Did it come by post?"
"No. No, it couldn't have come by post. It was just there in my room. Someone must have put it there."
"I see. Bribed one of the servants, I suppose. I am to take it that you didn't let the Contessa, whoever it was, in on this?"
A faint smile appeared on Elvira's face. "No, no, we certainly didn't. Anyway, we opened the box, and they were lovely chocolates. Different kind, you know, but there were some violet creams. That's the sort of chocolate that has a crystallized violet on top, my favourite. So, of course, I ate one or two of those first. And then afterwards, in the night, I felt terribly ill. I didn't think it was the chocolates. I just thought it was something perhaps I'd eaten at dinner."
"Anybody else ill?"
"No, only me. Well, I was very sick and all that, but I felt all right by the end of the next day. Then a day or two later, I ate another of the same chocolates, and the same thing happened. So I talked to Bridget about it. Bridget was my special friend. And we looked at the chocolates, and we found that the violet creams had got a sort of hole in the bottom that had been filled up again. So we thought that someone had put some poison in, and they'd only put it in the violet creams so that I would be the one who ate them."
Nobody else was ill?
No.
So presumably nobody else ate the violet creams?
No, I don't think they could have. You see, it was my present, and they knew I liked the violet ones, so they'd leave them for me.
The chap took a risk, whoever he was, said Father. The whole place might have been poisoned.
It's absurd, said Lady Cedric sharply. Utterly absurd. I never heard of anything so crude.
Chief Inspector Davy made a slight gesture with his hand. Please, he said. Then he went on to Elvira.
Now, I find that very interesting, Miss Blake. And you still didn't tell the Contessa?
Oh, no, we didn't. She'd have made a terrible fuss.
What did you do with the chocolates?
We threw them away, said Elvira. They were lovely chocolates, she added with a tone of slight grief.
You didn't try and find out who sent them?
Elvira looked embarrassed. Well, you see, I thought it might have been Guido.
Yes, said Chief Inspector Davy cheerfully. And who is Guido?
Oh, Guido, Elvira paused. She looked at her mother.
Don't be stupid, said Bess Sedgwick. Tell Chief Inspector Davy about Guido, whoever he is.
Every girl of your age has a Guido in her life. You met him out there, I suppose?
Yes, when we were taken to the opera. He spoke to me there. He was nice. Very attractive. I used to see him sometimes when we went to classes. He used to pass me notes.
And I suppose, said Bess Sedgwick, that you told a lot of lies and made plans with some friends, and you managed to get out and meet him. Is that it?
Elvira looked relieved by this short cut to confession.
Yes. Sometimes Guido managed to...
What was Guido's other name?
I don't know, said Elvira. He never told me.
Chief Inspector Davy smiled at her.
You mean you're not going to tell? Never mind. I dare say we'll be able to find out quite all right without your help, if it should really matter. But why should you think that this young man, who was presumably fond of you, should want to kill you?
Oh, because he used to threaten things like that. I mean, we used to have rows now and then. He'd bring some of his friends with him, and I'd pretend to like them better than him, and he'd get very, very wild and angry. He said I'd better be careful what I did. I couldn't give him up just like that. But if I wasn't faithful to him, he'd kill me. I just thought he was being melodramatic and theatrical.
Elvira smiled suddenly and unexpectedly.
But it was all rather fun. I didn't think it was real or serious.
Well, said Chief Inspector Davy, I don't think it does seem very likely that a young man such as you describe would really poison chocolates and send them to you.
Well, I don't think so really either, said Elvira. But it must have been him, because I can't see that there's anyone else. It worried me. And then, when I came back here, I got a note. She stopped.
What sort of a note?
It just came in an envelope and was printed. It said, "Be on your guard. Somebody wants to kill you."
Chief Inspector Davy's eyebrows went up, indeed. Very curious. Yes, very curious. And it worried you. You were frightened?
Yes. I began to wonder who could possibly want me out of the way. That's why I tried to find out if I was really very rich.
Go on.
And the other day in London, something else happened. I was in the tube and there were a lot of people on the platform. I thought someone tried to push me onto the line.
My dear child, said Bess Sedgwick, don't romance.
Again Father made that slight gesture of his hand.
Yes, said Elvira, apologetically. I expect I have been imagining it all, but I don't know. I mean, after what happened this evening, it seems, doesn't it, as though it might all be true.
She turned suddenly to Bess Sedgwick, speaking with urgency.
Mother, you might know. Does anyone want to kill me? Could there be anyone? Have I got an enemy?
"Of course you've not got an enemy," said Bess Sedgwick impatiently. "Don't be an idiot. Nobody wants to kill you. Why should they? Then who shot at me tonight?"
"In that fog," said Bess Sedgwick, "you might have been mistaken for someone else. That's possible, don't you think?" she said, turning to Father.
"Yes, I think it might be quite possible," said Chief Inspector Davy.
Bess Sedgwick was looking at him very intently. He almost fancied the motion of her lips saying, "Later."
"Well," he said cheerfully, "we'd better get down to some more facts now. Where had you come from tonight? What were you doing walking along Pond Street on such a foggy evening?"
"I came up for an art class at the Tate this morning. Then I went to lunch with my friend Bridget. She lives in Onslow Square. We went to a film, and when we came out, there was this fog, quite thick and getting worse, and I thought perhaps I'd better not drive home."
"You drive a car, do you?"
"Yes. I took my driving test last summer. Only I'm not a very good driver, and I hate driving in fog. So Bridget's mother said I could stay the night. So I rang up Cousin Mildred. That's where I live, in Kent," Father nodded, "and I said I was going to stay up overnight. She said that was very wise."
"And what happened next?" asked Father.
"And then the fog seemed suddenly lighter. You know how patchy fogs are. So I said I would drive down to Kent after all. I said goodbye to Bridget and started off, but then it began to come down again. I didn't like it very much. I ran into a very thick patch of it, and I lost my way, and I didn't know where I was. Then, after a bit, I realised I was at Hyde Park Corner, and I thought, I really can't go down to Kent in this. At first I thought I'd go back to Bridget's, but then I remembered how I'd lost my way already. And then I realised that I was quite close to this nice hotel where Uncle Derek took me when I came back from Italy, and I thought, I'll go there, and I'm sure they can find me a room. Well, that was fairly easy. I found a place to leave the car, and then I walked back up the street towards the hotel."
"Did you meet anyone, or did you hear anyone walking near you?"
"It's funny you saying that, because I did think I heard someone walking behind me. Of course, there must be lots of people walking about in London. Only in a fog like this, it gives you a nervous feeling. I waited and listened, but I didn't hear any footsteps, and I thought I'd imagined them. I was quite close to the hotel by then."
"And then?"
"And then quite suddenly there was a shot. As I told you, it seemed to go right past my ear. The commissionaire man, who stands outside the hotel, came running down towards me, and he pushed me behind him, and then the other shot came. He fell down, and I screamed." She was shaking now.
Her mother spoke to her. "Steady, girl," said Bess in a low, firm voice. "Steady now." It was the voice Bess Sedgwick used for her horses, and it was quite as efficacious when used on her daughter. Elvira blinked at her, drew herself up a little, and became calm again.
"Good girl," said Bess.
"And then you came," Elvira said to Father. "You blew your whistle. You told the policeman to take me into the hotel. And as soon as I got in, I saw Mother." She turned and looked at Bess Sedgwick.
"And that brings us more or less up to date," said Father.
He shifted his bulk a little in the chair.
"Do you know a man called Ladislaus Malinowski?" he asked.
His tone was even, casual, without any direct inflection. He did not look at the girl, but he was aware, since his ears were functioning at full attention, of a quick little gasp she gave. His eyes were not on the daughter, but on the mother.
"No," said Elvira, having waited just a shade too long to say it. "No, I don't."
"Oh," said Father, "I thought you might. I thought he might have been here this evening."
"Oh? Why should he be here?"
"Well, his car is here," said Father. "That's why I thought he might be."
"I don't know him," said Elvira.
"My mistake,"
said Father. You do, of course. He turned his head towards Bess Sedgwick.
Naturally, said Bess Sedgwick. Known him for many years. She added, smiling slightly, he's a madman, you know. Drives like an angel or a devil. He'll break his neck one of these days. Had a bad smash 18 months ago.
Yes, I remember reading about it, said Father. Not racing again yet, is he?
No, not yet. Perhaps he never will.
Do you think I could go to bed now? Asked Elvira plaintively. I'm really terribly tired.
Of course you must be, said Father. You've told us all you can remember.
Oh, yes.
I'll go up with you, said Bess. Mother and daughter went out together.
She knows him all right, said Father.
Do you really think so?
Asked Sergeant Waddell. I know it. She had tea with him in Battersea Park only a day or two ago.
How did you find that out?
Old lady told me. Distressed. Didn't think he was a nice friend for a young girl. He isn't, of course. Especially if he and the mother, Waddell broke off delicately. It's pretty general gossip. Yes. May be true. May not. Probably is. In that case, which one is he really after?
Father ignored that point. He said,
I want him picked up. I want him badly. His car's here, just round the corner.
Do you think he might be actually staying in this hotel?
Don't think so. It wouldn't fit into the picture. He's not supposed to be here. If he came here, he came to meet the girl. She definitely came to meet him, I'd say.
The door opened, and Bess Sedgwick reappeared. I came back, she said, because I wanted to speak to you. She looked from him to the other two men. I wonder if I could speak to you alone. I've given you all the information I have, such as it is, but I would like a word or two with you in private.
I don't see any reason why not, said Chief Inspector Davy.
He motioned his head, and the young detective constable took his notebook and went out. Waddell went with him.
Well, said Chief Inspector Davy.
Lady Sedgwick sat down again opposite him.
That silly story about poisoned chocolates, she said. It's nonsense. Absolutely ridiculous. I don't believe anything of the kind ever happened.
You don't, eh?
Do you?
Father shook his head doubtfully.
You think your daughter cooked it up?
Yes. But why?
Well, if you don't know why, said Chief Inspector Davy, how should I know? She's your daughter. Presumably you know her better than I do.
I don't know her at all, said Bess Sedgwick bitterly. I've not seen her or had anything to do with her since she was 2 years old when I ran away from my husband.
Oh, yes, I know all that. I find it curious. You see, Lady Sedgwick, courts usually give the mother, even if she is a guilty party in a divorce, custody of a young child if she asks for it. Presumably then you didn't ask for it. You didn't want it.
I thought it better not.
Why?
I didn't think it was safe for her.
On moral grounds?
No. Not on moral grounds. Plenty of adultery nowadays. Children have to learn about it. Have to grow up with it. No, it's just that I am not really a safe person to be with. The life I lead wouldn't be a safe life. You can't help the way you're born. I was born to live dangerously. I'm not law-abiding or conventional. I thought it would be better for Elvira, happier, to have a proper English conventional bringing up, shielded, looked after, but minus a mother's love. I thought if she learned to love me, it might bring sorrow to her. Oh, you mayn't believe me, but that's what I felt.
I see. Do you still think you were right?
No, said Bess, I don't. I think now I may have been entirely wrong.
Does your daughter know Ladislaus Malinowski?
I'm sure she doesn't. She said so. You heard her.
I heard her, yes.
Well, then?
She was afraid, you know, when she was sitting here. In our profession, we get to know fear when we meet up with it. She was afraid.
Why? Chocolates or no chocolates, her life has been attempted. That tube story may be true enough. It was ridiculous. Like a thriller.
Perhaps. But that sort of thing does happen, Lady Sedgwick. Oftener than you'd think.
Can you give me any idea who might want to kill your daughter?
Nobody. Nobody at all,
she spoke vehemently. Chief Inspector Davies sighed and shook his head. Chapter 22. Chief Inspector Davy waited patiently until Mrs. Melford had finished talking. It had been a singularly unprofitable interview. Cousin Mildred had been incoherent, unbelieving, and generally feather-headed, or that was Father's private view. Accounts of Elvira's sweet manners, nice nature, troubles with her teeth, odd excuses told through the telephone had led on to serious doubts whether Elvira's friend Bridget was really a suitable friend for her. All these matters had been presented to the chief inspector in a kind of general hasty pudding. Mrs. Melford knew nothing, had heard nothing, had seen nothing, and had apparently deduced very little. A short telephone call to Elvira's guardian, Colonel Luscombe, had been even more unproductive, though fortunately less wordy.
"More Chinese monkeys," he muttered to his sergeant as he put down the receiver. "See no evil, hear no evil, speak no evil." The trouble is that everyone who's had anything to do with this girl has been far too nice, if you get my meaning. Too many nice people who don't know anything about evil. Not like my old lady.
The Bertram's Hotel one?
Yes, that one. She's had a long life of experience in noticing evil, fancying evil, suspecting evil, and going forth to do battle with evil. Let's see what we can get out of girlfriend Bridget.
The difficulties in this interview were represented first, last, and most of the time by Bridget's mamma. To talk to Bridget without the assistance of her mother took all Chief Inspector Davies' adroitness and cajolery. He was, it must be admitted, ably seconded by Bridget. After a certain amount of stereotyped questions and answers and expressions of horror on the part of Bridget's mother at hearing of Elvira's narrow escape from death, Bridget said,
"You know it's time for that committee meeting, Mum. You said it was very important."
"Oh, dear, dear," said Bridget's mother.
"You know they'll get into a frightful mess without you, Mummy."
"Oh, they will, they certainly will. But perhaps I ought..."
"No, that's quite all right, madam," said Chief Inspector Davy, putting on his kindly old father look. "You don't want to worry, just you get off. I've finished all the important things. You've told me really everything I wanted to know. I've just one or two routine inquiries about people in Italy, which I think your daughter, Miss Bridget, might be able to help me with."
"Well, if you think you could manage, Bridget..."
"Oh, I can manage, Mummy," said Bridget.
Finally, with a great deal of fuss, Bridget's mother went off to her committee.
"Oh, dear," said Bridget, sighing, as she came back after closing the front door. "Really, I do think mothers are difficult."
"So they tell me," said Chief Inspector Davy. "A lot of young ladies I come across have a lot of trouble with their mothers."
"I'd have thought you'd put it the other way round," said Bridget.
"Oh, I do," said Davy. "But that's not how the young ladies see it. Now, you can tell me a little more."
"I couldn't really speak frankly in front of Mummy," explained Bridget. "But I do feel, of course, that it is really important that you should know as much as possible about all this. I do know Elvira was terribly worried about something, and afraid. She wouldn't exactly admit she was in danger, but she was."
"I thought that might have been so.
Of course I didn't like to ask you too much in front of your mother.
Oh, no, said Bridget. We don't want Mummy to hear about it. She gets in such a frightful state about things, and she'd go and tell everyone. I mean, if Elvira doesn't want things like this to be known...
First of all, said Chief Inspector Davy, I want to know about a box of chocolates in Italy. I gather there was some idea that a box was sent to her which might have been poisoned. Bridget's eyes opened wide.
Poisoned? She said. Oh, no, I don't think so. At least...
There was something.
Oh, yes. A box of chocolates came, and Elvira did eat a lot of them, and she was rather sick that night, quite ill.
But she didn't suspect poison.
No. At least, oh, yes, she did say that someone was trying to poison one of us, and we looked at the chocolates to see, you know, if anything had been injected into them.
And had it?
No, it hadn't, said Bridget. At least not as far as we could see.
But perhaps your friend, Miss Elvira, might still have thought so.
Well, she might. But she didn't say any more.
But you think she was afraid of someone?
I didn't think so at the time, or notice anything. It was only here, later.
What about this man Guido? Bridget giggled.
He had a terrific crush on Elvira, she said.
And you and your friend used to meet him places?
Well, I don't mind telling you, said Bridget. After all, you're the police. It isn't important to you, that sort of thing, and I expect you understand. Countess Martinelli was frightfully strict, or thought she was, and of course we had all sorts of dodges and things. We all stood in with each other, you know.
And told the right lies, I suppose.
Well, I'm afraid so, said Bridget. But what can one do when anyone is so suspicious?
So you did meet Guido and all that, and he used to threaten Elvira?
Oh, not seriously, I don't think.
Then perhaps there was someone else she used to meet?
Oh, that. Well, I don't know.
Please tell me, Miss Bridget. It might be vital, you know.
Yes. Yes, I can see that. Well, there was someone. I don't know who it was, but there was someone else. She really minded about. She was deadly serious. I mean, it was a really important thing.
She used to meet him?
I think so. I mean, she'd say she was meeting Guido. But it wasn't always Guido. It was this other man.
Any idea who it was?
No, Bridget sounded a little uncertain.
It wouldn't be a racing motorist called Ladislaus Malinowski.
Bridget gaped at him. So you know?
Am I right?
Yes, I think so. She'd got a photograph of him torn out of a paper. She kept it under her stockings.
That might have been just a pin-up hero, mightn't it?
Well, it might, of course, but I don't think it was.
Did she meet him here in this country, do you know?
I don't know. You see, I don't know really what she's been doing since she came back from Italy.
She came up to London to the dentist, David prompted her, or so she said. Instead, she came to you. She rang up Mrs. Melford with some story about an old governess.
A faint giggle came from Bridget.
That wasn't true, was it? Said the chief inspector, smiling.
Where did she really go? Bridget hesitated, and then she said, She went to Ireland.
She went to Ireland, did she?
Why? She wouldn't tell me. She said there was something she had to find out.
Do you know where she went in Ireland?
Not exactly. She mentioned a name, Bally something. Bally Gowlan, I think it was.
I see.
You're sure she went to Ireland?
I saw her off at Kensington Airport. She went by Aer Lingus.
She came back when?
The following day.
Also by air?
Yes.
You're quite sure, are you, that she came back by air?
Well, I suppose she did.
Had she taken a return ticket?
No. No, she didn't, I remember.
She might have come back another way, mightn't she?
Yes, I suppose so.
She might have come back, for instance, by the Irish Mail.
She didn't say she had.
But she didn't say she'd come by air, did she?
No, Bridget agreed. But why should she come back by boat and train instead of by air?
Well, if she had found out what she wanted to know and had had nowhere to stay, she might think it would be easier to come back by the night mail.
Why, I suppose she might.
Davy smiled faintly. I don't suppose you young ladies, he said, think of going anywhere except in terms of flying, do you, nowadays?
I suppose we don't, really, agreed Bridget.
Anyway, she came back to England. Then what happened? Did she come to you or ring you up?
She rang up.
What time of day?
Oh, in the morning sometime. Yes, it must have been about 11 or 12 o'clock, I think.
And she said what?
Well, she just asked if everything was all right.
And was it?
No, it wasn't, because, you see, Mrs. Melford had rung up, and Mummy had answered the phone, and things had been very difficult, and I hadn't known what to say. So Elvira said she would not come to Onslow Square, but that she'd ring up her cousin Mildred and try to fix up some story or other.
And that's all you can remember?
That's all, said Bridget, making certain reservations.
She thought of Mr. Bollard and the bracelet. That was certainly a thing she was not going to tell Chief Inspector Davy. Father knew quite well that something was being kept from him. He could only hope that it was not something pertinent to his inquiry. He asked again, "You think your friend was really frightened of someone or something?"
"Yes, I do."
"Did she mention it to you, or did you mention it to her?"
"Oh, I asked her outright. At first she said no, and then she admitted that she was frightened, and I know she was," went on Bridget violently. "She was in danger. She was quite sure of it. But I don't know why or how or anything about it."
"Your surety on this point relates to that particular morning, does it? The morning she had come back from Ireland?"
"Yes. Yes, that's when I was so sure about it."
"On the morning when she might have come back on the Irish Mail?"
"I don't think it's very likely that she did. Why don't you ask her?"
"I probably shall do in the end, but I don't want to call attention to that point, not at the moment. It might just possibly make things more dangerous for her."
Bridget opened round eyes.
"What do you mean?"
"You may not remember it, Miss Bridget, but that was the night, or rather the early morning, of the Irish Mail robbery."
"Do you mean that Elvira was in that and never told me a thing about it?"
"I agree it's unlikely," said Father. "But it just occurred to me that she might have seen something or someone or some incident might have occurred connected with the Irish Mail. She might have seen someone she knew, for instance, and that might have put her in danger."
"Oh,"
said Bridget. She thought it over.
"You mean someone she knew was mixed up in the robbery?"
Chief Inspector Davy got up.
"I think that's all," he said. "Sure there's nothing more you can tell me?" "Nowhere where your friend went that day, or the day before?"
Again, visions of Mr. Bollard and the Bond Street shop rose before Bridget's eyes.
"No," she said.
"I think there is something you haven't told me," said Chief Inspector Davy.
Bridget grasped thankfully at a straw.
"Oh, I forgot," she said. "Yes. I mean, she did go to some lawyers who were trustees, to find out something."
"Oh,
She went to some lawyers who were her trustees. I don't suppose you know their name.
Their name was Edgerton. Forbes, Edgerton, and something, said Bridget. Lots of names. I think that's more or less right.
I see. And she wanted to find out something, did she?
She wanted to know how much money she'd got, said Bridget.
Inspector Davy's eyebrows rose.
Indeed, he said. Interesting. Why didn't she know herself?
Oh, because people never told her anything about money, said Bridget. They seem to think it's bad for you to know actually how much money you have.
And she wanted to know badly, did she?
Yes, said Bridget. I think she thought it was important.
Well, thank you, said Chief Inspector Davy. You've helped me a good deal.
Chapter 23. Richard Edgerton looked at the official card in front of him, then up into the Chief Inspector's face.
Curious business, he said.
Yes, sir, said Chief Inspector Davy. A very curious business.
Bertram's Hotel, said Edgerton, in the fog. Yes, it was a bad fog last night.
I suppose you get a lot of that sort of thing in fogs, don't you? Snatch and grab, handbags, that sort of thing.
It wasn't quite like that, said Father. Nobody attempted to snatch anything from Miss Blake.
Where did the shot come from?
Owing to the fog, we can't be sure. She wasn't sure herself, but we think, it seems the best idea, that the man may have been standing in the area.
He shot at her twice, you say?
Yes. The first shot missed. The commissionaire rushed along from where he was standing outside the hotel door and shoved her behind him just before the second shot.
So that he got hit instead, eh?
Yes.
Quite a brave chap.
Yes. He was brave, said the Chief Inspector. His military record was very good. An Irishman.
What's his name?
Gorman.
Michael Gorman. Michael Gorman, Edgerton frowned for a minute. No, he said. For a moment I thought the name meant something.
It's a very common name, of course. Anyway, he saved the girl's life.
And why exactly have you come to me, Chief Inspector?
I hoped for a little information. We always like full information, you know, about the victim of a murderous assault.
Oh, naturally, naturally. But really, I've only seen Elvira twice since she was a child.
You saw her when she came to call upon you about a week ago, didn't you?
Yes, that's quite right. What exactly do you want to know? If it's anything about her personally, who her friends were, or about boyfriends, or lovers' quarrels, all that sort of thing, you'd do better to go to one of the women. There's a Mrs. Carpenter, who brought her back from Italy, I believe, and there's Mrs. Melford, with whom she lives in Sussex.
I've seen Mrs. Melford.
Oh.
No good. Absolutely no good at all, sir. And I don't so much want to know about the girl personally. After all, I've seen her for myself, and I've heard what she can tell me, or rather, what she's willing to tell me.
At a quick movement of Edgerton's eyebrows, he saw that the other had appreciated the point of the word willing.
I've been told that she was worried, upset, afraid about something, and convinced that her life was in danger.
Was that your impression when she came to see you?
No, said Edgerton, slowly. No, I wouldn't go as far as to say that, though she did say one or two things that struck me as curious, such as,
well, she wanted to know who would benefit if she were to die suddenly.
Ah, said Chief Inspector Davy.
So she had that possibility in her mind, did she? That she might die suddenly. Interesting.
She'd got something in her head, but I didn't know what it was. She also wanted to know how much money she had, or would have, when she was 21. That, perhaps, is more understandable. It's a lot of money, I believe.
It's a very large fortune, Chief Inspector.
Why do you think she wanted to know?
About the money?
Yes. And about who would inherit it?
I don't know, said Edgerton. I don't know at all.
She also brought up the subject of marriage.
Did you form the impression that there was a man in the case? I've no evidence, but yes, I did think just that. I felt sure there was a boyfriend somewhere in the offing. There usually is. Luscombe, that's Colonel Luscombe, her guardian, doesn't seem to know anything about a boyfriend. But then dear old Derek Luscombe wouldn't. He was quite upset when I suggested that there was such a thing in the background, and probably an unsuitable one at that.
He is unsuitable, said Chief Inspector Davy.
Oh, then you know who he is?
I can have a very good guess at it. Ladislaus Malinowski.
The racing motorist? Really? A handsome daredevil. Women fall for him easily. I wonder how he came across Elvira. I don't see very well where their orbits would meet, except... Yes, I believe he was in Rome a couple of months ago. Possibly she met him there.
Very possibly. Or she could have met him through her mother.
What, through Bess? I wouldn't say that was at all likely.
Davy coughed. Lady Sedgwick and Malinowski are said to be close friends, sir.
Oh, yes, yes, I know that's the gossip. Maybe true, maybe not. They are close friends, thrown together constantly by their way of life. Bess has had her affairs, of course, though, mind you, she's not the nymphomaniac type. People are ready enough to say that about a woman, but it's not true in Bess's case. Anyway, as far as I know, Bess and her daughter are practically not even acquainted with each other.
That's what Lady Sedgwick told me, and you agree?
Edgerton nodded.
What other relatives has Miss Blake got?
For all intents and purposes, none. Her mother's two brothers were killed in the war, and she was old Coniston's only child. Mrs. Melford, though the girl calls her cousin Mildred, is actually a cousin of Colonel Luscombe's. Luscombe's done his best for the girl in his conscientious, old-fashioned way, but it's difficult for a man.
Miss Blake brought up the subject of marriage, you say. There's no possibility, I suppose, that she may actually already be married.
She's well under age. She'd have to have the assent of her guardian and trustees.
Technically, yes, but they don't always wait for that, said Father.
I know. It's most regrettable. One has to go through all the machinery of making them wards of court and all the rest of it, and even that has its difficulties.
And once they're married, said Father.
I suppose if she were married and died suddenly, her husband would inherit.
This idea of marriage is most unlikely. She has been most carefully looked after, and...
He stopped, reacting to Chief Inspector Davy's cynical smile. However carefully Elvira had been looked after, she seemed to have succeeded in making the acquaintance of the highly unsuitable Ladislaus Malinowski. He said dubiously,
"Our mother bolted, it's true."
"Her mother bolted, yes. That's what she would do. But Miss Blake's a different type. She's just as set on getting her own way, but she'd go about it differently."
"You don't really think?"
"I don't think anything.
Yet," said Chief Inspector Davy.
End of Disc 5.